Mickey Hart here, you're listening to GAR Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The county players seem to be getting special attention. They would be targeted in games, especially key players. Welcome to Thursday Show, Conor Doherty here. No Woolley, no Connor. And I have to say, after I saw Alan Brogan sitting on my seat there on Monday, I thought I was going to get chucked out of the WhatsApp group as well. But I'm here. Here I am, still alive, live to tell the tale, and I'm joined by someone who can help with this very quote. The county players seem to be getting special attention. They would be targeted in games, especially the key players. That's Cavan manager Mickey Graham speaking in the Irish News about how he thinks his players are there to be shot at during April for clubs. County men go back to clubs, basically. Club players want their heads on a stick. So, to that end, I've dragged Alan Lochnan in from the office. Alan, Galway native, senior herder of Capitagal, and most importantly, someone who has experience, and I mean a lot of experience, in targeting county players at club games.
Oh, that's quite an intro you've given me there. Now I feel like you've completely misled people on my experience targeting county players, but yeah, I have marked a couple, but I would not say I've targeted them.
I'd say you're a spoiler. I'd say you're the dogs that they send in. Get them.
Without doubt, I'm a spoiler. Most of the time I'm told not to do too much hurling, just to stop them going.
Don't you worry about the hurling. Don't you worry about the slugger.
Yeah, don't worry. If you don't touch a ball, that's fine, as long as he doesn't touch it either. But
comes to April, you're licking your lips, you get another shot at these big shot county players in their ears. You've got all your work done, you've been sort of researching whatever you want to say to them, and you're ready to go, you're let out of the cage.
I feel like, no, you're spreading a false narrative here now at this point, but I will ask you first off, what do you mean by targeting, so I can answer this properly?
Well, that's why I have you here. You can tell me. What is targeting? No, targeting, you're targeting a county player. It's not that you want to injure him. It's that you want him to not want to be there. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you're saying, but I think it's only natural that teams would, like, the county player for a team is usually their best player.
Yeah.
So it's only natural that you don't want their opposition's best player to have a big impact on the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, yeah, they're targeted, but I'd say that's just using logic, that you target the team's best player.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just say, like let's just talk about, say, centre-back for a hurling team. They're usually a pretty good player. If they're the county player for that team, you know, you can target them a few ways. You can either, like, attack them, so you hit the ball down on top of them. When they catch it, you swamp them. And
but then when you say swamp them, are you trying to hurt them?
No, I'm not trying to hurt them at all. I'm just
some people are trying to hurt them.
No. I'm not talking about trying to hurt them. I'm talking about you're targeting them in such a way that, you know, you want them to fall, in a sense, so that the other players around them see that their best player is, he's not having a good day.
Yeah,
he's under pressure here. Oh God, we're under pressure now. Yeah. Because our best player's
knocked out the big pillar, and the rest of it'll fall down.
Well, yeah. Not literally now, but yeah.
But that's interesting. So, like, this might bring it on a bit more. So you would play a lot wing halfback
yeah.
for most of the time. You'd man mark around the defense if you have to. But would you ever be given a job to man mark a centre back or a halfback?
I would say, like, we have played teams in the past, you know, where their county player was playing centre back, and we've had plans, you know, to take them on and put them into positions they're uncomfortable in, I'd say. But, like, it would never be anything malicious or anything like that. It would be about, you know, they're strong in the air, so we can go at them two ways. We can either avoid them altogether, or we can play around or play as normal and hope he doesn't have a great game, or else we can hit the ball down top of him but be ready that when he catches it, three of our players are going to come in, tackle them, put him under pressure, try and force a turnover. And it's a big, big morale boost for everyone else around then.
Yeah, I think so. I think Mickey Graham's concerns. So Cavan are playing Monaghan, I think it's May 19th. So start of the championship, playing the All-Ireland semi-finalists at home. Big game. It's his first year's management. And he's talking about the players being targeted and why he's concerned. So he said, this is in the Irish News, it's nervous times at the weekend. Every game there's somebody picking up something. It doesn't help the county. Any lads that pick up knocks at this stage are probably missing a week's training, and you're only 5 weeks out. Every session the lads are missing has a knock-on effect further down the line. I understand what's going on. it's just annoying that the lads are picking up so many knocks in a short space of time. So it's not clear there if he understands that they're all playing club games or whatever, but he is talking about them being targeted, especially key players. But is there that culture of letting them have it as well?
Well, like, yeah, obviously I'm not saying that there's that doesn't go on. But I would certainly say that, yeah, there probably is some teams out there that, you know, they if they get a chance to hit their best player within the laws of the game that they don't get sent off, I'd say they're being encouraged to take it.
Mm.
But, like, why wouldn't you?
But why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you injure their best player?
Well, not, why wouldn't, no, but why wouldn't you, if you have the chance to make a big hit on someone, like, you're not going to pull out?
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's absolutely fair, Rick, you know? Yeah. But I
obviously within the laws of the game, but yeah, there is, I'm sure there is. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say everyone's golden and all my and all that, but I'm sure, yeah, maybe some teams are.
But we have, like, we've all probably sat in change rooms. It doesn't happen all the time. It definitely doesn't even happen the majority of the time, but sat in change rooms where managers or coaches or players have said, number eight or David, whoever, like, you know, go get him, like, you know, let him know you're there. And, like, it is, it's almost like a scalp, like a, you know, like a war skill, you know, where you sort of bring it back as a trophy. Then, like, when you take a scalp, you see their best player going off injured, or as you say, you see him falling and somebody getting the big hit or getting on top of them, then they are, like, they do have target dots in their head. But you have to remember, I think the annoying thing for Mickey Graham or any of these county players is that they are playing for the county then in 3-4 weeks time, and they're expected to be going through all this as well at club level.
Yeah, and that's true. And I suppose, like, I don't know what the figures are on this, but you do, in my experience, you do see a lot of county players getting yellow cards and things like that on the pitch. And you wonder if that's the direct relations, like, they're getting dogged on the pitch and they lash back and they get the card and they're the one who gets caught. So I don't know what the figures are on that, but just a little observation.
I remember we were playing minor championship one time, it was back in Derry, and We had the best minor in Derry. He was called Emmett Green. He was, like, legendary at the time. He was coming through and everybody knew about him. He was playing for Ireland and stuff at underage level. And this sort of fight broke out anyway, because everyone was always targeting him. But no, he was big, strong. He couldn't really stop him. But then this fight broke out. And then this guy had obviously been waiting for this moment for, like, 7 weeks. And he stood back. His eyes were bulging. His fists were clenched. And he was shaking as well. And he goes, "I'm not afraid of you, Emmett Green." And your man, Emmett, was like, "Who the hell are you?"
What is going on here?
Yeah,
what,
but it shows you, like, so it was so insignificant to him. But this was this guy's big moment. Like, I'm going to take on Emmett Green. And I'm going to show him I'm not afraid of him. Like, look, I don't mean to put you on trial here, Alan. I like what you do. I respect what you do. And I think there's a definite need for people like you out there.
People like me, right.
But I want to talk about drink bans now. This is another reason why you're in. So we're talking about targeting county players and drink bans. That's why we have Alan in. So Lee Keegan has been in the press all week. And so he's giving out about drink bans and the idea that you have to sort of go off it in a blanket ban for 9-10 months or whatever it is. So you're nearly 30 and you can't go drinking. You sit in the pub even having a maiwadi and the heads are staring over at you. Why is he in here? If you can't have a normal life like that, what's the point? I think it's just a culture of NGA. I always look at professional sports and particularly rugby. They have a few beers after the game and they train 2 days later and perform at the highest level the week after. That's the way the GAA should look at it as well. It's part and parcel of life. If you can't enjoy life with a bit of success, or even if you lose, have a few beers with your teammates, that's part of sport and you have to have that as well. There has to be balance. If you always are locked into GAA, what is there out there for yourself? And it's just an interesting way of looking at it. Like, it's not like, you know, we all want to, like, oh, let's let the lads loose. We all just want to have a, you know, a big party or whatever, like, you know, but it is the idea that you're not allowed to, just not allowed to do it. And part of me thinks the club managers love this idea of a drink ban.
Well, I'd agree and I disagree as well at that. I'm going to contradict myself. But I would have thought maybe 3 or 4 years ago that would have definitely been the case, that managers would be like that at club level as well, that you couldn't be seen with it. But I do think more in recent years that managers are more like, trust the players a little bit more, especially from my experience anyway, that they're convinced enough that lads aren't going to go do the dogging it, you know, the week of a game or the week before a game. Mm. And I think that's the right way.
But is it not like, it's not even, sometimes I think they're not even thinking about it, say, nutritionally or, you know, whatever you're putting into your body. I just think a lot of it is just mental. Like, they love a bit of self-sacrifice. And, like, a drink ban is an easy way to instill discipline. Well, and it's an easy way to see who steps out of line. There's a clear metric. If you drink, you stepped out of line.
Well, yeah, exactly. There's, like, a bit of a taboo to be seen with a pint in your hand from February to October, whenever the season's on, I suppose, like. And,
But is this like it's sort of self-policed as well. Like, so it's not even like sometimes the managers don't even need to say it anymore. But it's almost like players, like, I don't know if they're brainwashed, because it isn't happening all the time every year in every club. But there are some years where it comes along and the players almost get sort of caught up in this way of life, and they start to sort of, you know, they are policing boys and looking to see if anybody's stepping out of line, and it is a way for them to sort of whip everybody into shape as well.
Well, yeah, I suppose it's with the, we always have the leadership kind of group in every team.
Yeah.
And I suppose a few years ago, as an example, in our club, there was, I shouldn't say in our club in case any of our things are listening, in an unnamed club in the west. Out west somewhere. there was a 21st for one of the lads on at the weekend, and you know, most of the team were at it because there was a guy that was involved in the team. Lads went and had a few pints and that was grand. We're back at training on Tuesday.
Oh, we'll find out who's been drinking.
Yeah. There was a bit of a group call at training, and lads were asked, you know, who was drinking at the weekend and could you put up your hands?
Like a team meeting about this?
Like, it was just, at the end of training, just called in, everyone was called in.
Oh, into the changing rooms?
No. It wasn't anything as formal as that now. Look, I might be over-egging it a bit here, but it was just more of an informal call in, just like, you know, who was drinking at the weekend, and you know what, like, everyone put up their hands. So,
27 people just putting their hands up.
And let's be honest now, we a few county representatives at the time, and they put up their hand as well, like, so then a couple of the older lads who had been there, you know, saying it's 6 weeks out of the championship, lads, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, come on, that's 6 weeks, you know, it's never going to be in your system.
So do you think that's okay to be drinking 6 weeks out? And a couple of you looking at each other just nodding your heads slowly.
Yeah, just looking solemn, you know, trying to do the old contrite look.
Yeah, 6 weeks is a long time. Do you have a bracket where you allow yourself to?
You know what, like, I don't necessarily believe in drink bans anymore. Like, I wouldn't. No, that's gonna sound like, yeah, you know, I'm
that's
out.
Your catchphrase?
Yeah.
You're out every night. I don't believe in drink bans.
Yeah, I'm out. Pints, lads, as that. No. Like, I would try to. I'd never go wild anyway during the year. Like, if we've games going up, you just wouldn't go wild anyway. But maybe, like, 10 days beforehand, I wouldn't touch anything. But, like, yeah. I might.
But 11 days is fine.
11 days is fine, no. But, like, I'm not saying, like, the 2 weeks before that I'll be, like, going mad. But if my mates are out having pints and one of my friends is going away or something like that, I'll go out and I'll have a pint with them. And it's, you know, that one pint isn't going to affect me when it comes to championship and running for a ball, like, you know?
See, this is the interesting thing I think about the drink ban, right? So I'm not even. Because the thing I hate about the drink ban, again, it's not about the desire to drink and boys should be allowed to get pissed or whatever else. It's just. Like, it's as arbitrary as a crisp ban or something. You know, I know drinking's a bit, you know, it can be a bit worse for you in the long run or whatever, but, you know, it's just the one thing that people hone in on, and it's just that culture then that people pick up on. But, like, I think unless you're actually going to monitor every single thing that you could be doing to assess your performance, then, like, you know, I don't know why you're sort of focusing on that specifically.
Well, yeah, I suppose, like, it does, there's clearly is effects, you know, when you go drink heavily, you know, it affects your sport performance if you're doing it the whole time, you know, and if you're doing it day before games, there's no doubting that.
But the way I would always see it is, like, if there's somebody who's drinking the night before a game, or he's been drinking just all the time throughout the season, and then he's still better than me. Do you know, I know there's probably a discipline element to it, like, you saw at some level, and a bit of respect, I suppose, for your teammates and the training you're doing, but if he's still better than me come the Sunday, it's like, well, geez, that's my fault. Like, you know what? I should be getting ahead of him if it's so bad for you.
Yeah. But I suppose there's a bit of it as well. You know, you're talking about lads stepping out of line and lads putting in the effort. And I suppose that would come under the line is that this guy is that good that when he drinks like this or is, you know, partying like this, he's still one of our best players. Imagine if he actually applied himself and things like that. And it's a bit like lads are putting in an effort, you know, and not everyone's the same level. So obviously, like you were saying, you're not as good as this guy, but like you're trying your hardest to be there for the team, do everything. That guy's not really doing that.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like that would spread through the rest of the team as well.
But yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. Like, and there is a sort of, there is a discipline element to it. But I think if you want to deter that guy in the long run, then the best way to self-police, rather than, you know, just saying to boys, you can't drink forever, or shut up while we're stretching, What is that, by the way? Like, you know, when you're doing a cool down, shut up and concentrate on your hamstring stretch. I can do it while I'm talking.
Do you want lads to enjoy the train or not? Come
on. Exactly. But the main deterrent for him drinking should be when he comes back to training on Tuesday, that you're actually training is so tough. And so, like, I don't mean it's slogs of running and all, but the older boys are at the pitch and it's sharp and intense and they're driving into each other. And, like, you know, this guy thinks, Jesus, I do not want to feel like that again come Tuesday. Like, so you need to, as a group, make training so hard that he won't want to go out drinking. He'll want to be ready for training the next time.
Yeah, but that'll bring us completely onto a different debate, like, about, you know, we start training in January, February or whatever like that, and we might play a championship game in April and then you've 3 months, 4 months break. So how are lads going to be at the pitch every night, you know, at this fever pitch of a pace? You know, it's just, it's not really possible. So, but we're not going to get into that now.
The championship structures need to change. I'm not getting into that.
Here's how we fix it, right?
Willie will have a stroke if he hears me talking about championship structures, especially when he's not here. But one man who doesn't have this problem, Phil McMahon, doesn't drink. But he had a great interview in the Irish Times there with Ian O'Riordan. And there was something that he was saying, just a thought, like, you know, GA players all over the country could relate to, but the whole piece was about positive thinking, and I thought, oh, this is an interesting angle, rather than the usual championship structures or whatever else. But I mean, I really like this piece where he said, sometimes you want to feel that bit of pain. So he's talking about in the morning when you wake up, because it's like a reward, knowing you've done something good. Most people still shy away from physical and mental pain. When you have to embrace it, learn from it. And I thought, that is class. Like, there is something so pure and, like, yeah, self-fulfilling when you wake up in the morning and, like, you've done a session that you haven't enjoyed on the Tuesday night, but then come Wednesday morning, you're like, that's in the bag, like, it's under the belt, and this guy drinking is going to he's going to regret that he missed that session, like, he actually have done something good. And it reminded me of I think Kevin McStay was on this show recently, and he was talking about a great line about real confidence. Again, like, sort of versus fake confidence. So he's going about these lads who sort of, you know, puff their chests out and they do a bit of bicep curves in the gym. And I'm looking at you now, Elle. No, but they're sort of portraying this confidence, but they don't really have it in them. When something goes bad, like, and I have done this myself, if you're not, like, you know, doing as much training as you can, something starts going bad in a game, you feel like a bit of a fraud then, like, or like you're going to get exposed. You're always waiting for the moment that you're going to get exposed. But when you've done the work, you've done all the runs, you've eaten right, you haven't drank, so maybe that's where it comes in handy. It's a mentality, like, you know then that you can overcome the first obstacle, and you sort of deserve to win.
Well, yeah. Well, look, I'm going to get all philosophical here now.
Go for it.
I'm going to reference a book, but I read this book called Mind Gym by Gary Mack, and there's a line in it that he says, confidence comes from over preparation. So, like, I don't know, like, obviously with psychology and things like this, there's not one size fits all, I don't think. Like, you got to find what works for you. But for me, that kind of stuck with me, because I'd always have to, you know, have done the run and have done the hard training to, you know, to when I'm running for the ball, that I'm going to control that first time and it's going to be up in my hand and I'm going to be away. And it's just, I think that comes from, like, repetition. So it's like, just, you're out there, you're training loads, and when it comes down to it, then you know that you can do it. And
so confidence comes from overtraining,
over preparation.
I was not like, overtraining. That sounds bad.
No, not overtraining. Over preparation. So it's almost like convincing yourself you've done absolutely everything you can
and more
to be the best you can be in this game, or when the time comes down to it. And, you know, like, when you get to a tough point, it's just like, right, I've done that running session. We ran up that hill or whatever like that, or we did those sprints or and all that. And you have that in the back of your mind. And I suppose you're chatting there about, you know, you're playing the game whenever and things are getting tough, you know, but, like, there's nothing worse than someone absolutely hurling you in a game, or some lad absolutely destroying you and you're tired and everything like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can drag yourself back to that, in that mindset that you've done this run and you're just as fit as him, you're as fast as him, you've the same.
And in the long run, you're going to start overrun him now. So.
Yeah. It's like, he's ahead of me now, but it's going to even out.
Because there's nothing worse than the worrying about getting exposed, say, if you feel like you haven't done enough work. But there's nothing better than when you've done something good, even. Like, so say you run up a pitch and I wouldn't score, I'll set up a score. Yeah. I'll pass it off to a better player. But then running back sort of into position and feeling like I'm going again.
And what, someone shouts, that's your score, Conor. Yeah. You know, that one.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's your score.
You picked up everybody. That. Even though, like, you were just one of seven people who helped the score or whatever. But then you're sort of, you're just ready to go for the next ball, and you sort of feel like your man's tired beside you. And then you start thinking, I've done more work than this boy, I'm going to sort of drive him into the ground here.
But that's it, like, it's football and hurling, they're competitive sports, and no matter, they're team sports, but at the same time, they're individual battles. And there's something very satisfying about you taking on your man one-on-one in a battle and you coming out, you realising that you've the upper hand here. You're winning all these balls.
No, I don't like this. I like the blanket defence and no, I like people helping me out in the back line.
See,
and this swarming, tackling.
You can see I'm more of a hurler here now. There's less of that. I've been less corrupted.
Stop trying to drag me into a hurling show here.
Into a hurling debate, yeah.
But there's more on this. Actually, Philly did take a deep dive in the interview. So too many people start off the day on a negative, giving out about going to work, school, or the weather. If you start negative, the day will likely continue that way. What you do in the morning sets you up for the day. Start with one thing positive, that can start a cycle to stay motivated for the day. Start on a negative, and that might continue, and suddenly the day is gone. It's very very Conor McGregor-esque almost, like, you know, this law of attraction style of thing. Like, you know, I believe something good's going to happen. I'm putting it out there to the universe, and it's going to come back, and I'm going to be sort of rewarded for what I believe was going to happen. Do you believe in the law of attraction?
Look,
where the hell is this show?
Wow, this is deep now. Look, I would agree with that to a certain point. Like, you've got to control what you can control. So I'm going to go back to that book I was talking about earlier again. But he talks mostly about American sports. But there's a really good example about, he uses a golfer on a tee. So he's talking about a guy teeing off and he's saying that, you know, don't hit the ball. In his head, he's whispering to himself, don't hit the ball into the water. Don't hit the ball into the water. Don't hit the ball into the water. What does he do? He hits the ball into the water. And he's like, don't think like that. You got to think of, hit this ball onto the green. I'm going to hit this ball right onto the green. And your man steps up and hits it onto the green. So you got to focus on the positive aspects and not let the negative thoughts in your head affect the outcome, basically.
This is an interesting one because my girlfriend's like got a career in psychology, right? And she has this book. I was looking through it one day at home. It's just by this psychologist called Louise Hay. And she believes that every single illness or injury you have is brought about by a mental thing in your own head. So basically, you've brought about every illness that you have. So every time I have a cough, my girlfriend would say to me, "What's wrong with you?" And I'd be like, "I just have a cough." And she'd be like, "Oh no, but that means you're holding something in. You're not speaking your mind."
Tell me.
So I started to get more and more annoyed by this because I had the sniffles one day. My nose was running, and then Louise Hay tells you that means you're crying on the inside. So, like, you know, I tried to put this thing to the test then. And I started asking her, like, you know, well, I've got a broken finger at the minute. I was like, well, what does Louise Hay say about that? And she said to me, what finger is it? I was like, what do you mean, what finger is it? And she said, each finger represents a different emotional... Now, this is just Louise Hay's theory, and, like, my girlfriend's playing devil's advocate with a lot of it. So, again, I started getting more and more worked up. I was like, I just fell on my finger. She's like, oh, well, it wasn't a coincidence that you fell on that specific finger. And then... I brought out the tape of a YouTube video of Tom Parsons' injury. I was like, "What about this? You know, what happened? Was that his fault?" And like, you know, she's like, "Well, you know, maybe like there was a reason why he was in that position." I was like, "No, the goalie player slid into the ball, slid into his knee, complete accident, horrific accident."
Are we getting back to now like this is God's plan? You know.
Well, like that's sort of what I was getting annoyed about then. So I started replaying this Tom Parsons video until she walked out, and we had
there is no possible reason for this. Yeah.
This is a complete coincidence.
This is a sham.
Yeah, well, like, I know, it's a good interview by Philly. And it's in the Irish Times, but some general news before we lose the run of ourselves completely, talking about psychology like this.
God, Woody is going to be so annoyed when he comes back.
So, Donegal, another blow for Donegal. Martin O'Reilly's left the panel, being reported by the BBC. So, Oran McNeilish obviously left, where he said he wasn't going to continue playing for the rest of the season. He said that in Highland Radio. He said he wasn't enjoying his football. You add that to Martin McIlhenny isn't there anymore. Mark McHugh, Steve McBurty, Dara O'Connor, they all left at the start of the year, weren't there at the start of the year. And Declan Bonner was getting a bit spiky about being asked about them. So it's just a blow. Like, they're losing all these like real established players. And someone like Martin O'Reilly, like, I honestly, I've never seen a man kick 3 points from play as consistently as he does and never really have it mentioned. It's almost just like, you know, the way it's reported is like he won another breaking ball, you know, which he does. He did all the donkey work and he kicked 3 from play just quite regularly, and now he's gone. But and then Donegal, obviously, it's a repeat of the Ulster finals. They were playing Fermanagh away in the first round, so it's not an easy one. They got Tyrone in the semi-finals, and remember Donegal last year. No, like, anytime you win Ulster, it's, you know, it's a big achievement. But last year, they had the beauty of Monaghan beating Tyrone for them, and then Fermanagh beating Monaghan. So they didn't have to play Tyrone or Monaghan, which generally you'd have to at least beat one of them, if not two, to win Ulster. Like, that's the way it is. They're the 3 big teams at the minute. But so it's tough that they've lost all these players. But then I started looking at their panel, and like, you know, the reason why Martin O'Reilly, who is based in Dublin as well, but the front eight options that they still have now, there's probably more we can add to this, but I have 12 players here that are top quality. Like, if you have Hugh McFadden, Jason McGee, Michael Langan, Michael Murphy, Kieran Thompson, Jamie Brennan, Paddy McBrearty, Dara O'Beal, Keelan McGonigal, Oisin Gallen, O'Donnell, Owen McHugh, do you know, that can keep going on and on and on. So like, they still have this amazing squad.
Oh, how many counties would kill for that?
It's yeah, crazy. Like, so as much as I was like, Jesus, like, we've been raving about Donegal, maybe we should roll back a bit, I looked at the panel then and thought, ah, nah, you know what,
that'll be grand.
Donegal are grand. Like, yeah, bit of hurling here, Alan. It's not really hurling, it's football disguised in hurling, because it comes in the form of Kilkenny. So the minor footballers are making a return to the minor championship, minor football championship, for the first time since 2016, when they suffered a 70-point defeat to Wexford. So they're back. I was reading the thing, I think it was in the Hogan Stand, but they played Laois, actually, the Kilkenny minor footballers, back in 97. Laois were the All-Ireland champions, and they, I think they took them to 3 points, you know, and just got beat by 3 points. So it was obviously, there was something good going on back then. Henry Shefflin scored 1-1 that day for Kilkenny. So, you know, there's talent in this county, but they're all too bloody busy with their sticks.
Look, why could have win informally, you know? They've been going well at the hurling, you know, concentrating one sport. That's what Derry have been doing, isn't it?
they're not concentrating on any sport, is the problem with Derry. And finally, I just have down here, absolute fucking screamer in Dublin Senior 2 Championship. So if anybody hasn't seen this, go and check it out on the website. Niall McIntyre did a piece. If you type in Robin Van Persie, you'll find it, because
it is an apt description of the finish.
Yeah, so St. Maurice are playing Round Towers from Clondalkin. There's a lot of Round Towers in Dublin, and Conor Maguire scored this absolute beauty, unbelievable. So Kieran Redden, obviously, was been involved with the Dublin panels over the last while, gets the ball in midfield and just pings this like outside of the boot ball, you know, to sort of diagonal ball in over the top of the defenders, and Maguire's away, but rather than catch the ball and have a tight enough angle and probably have to work it back out, just hammers it home on the half volley into the far top corner. So his left foot comes across the keeper into the far top corner, first time. And honestly, I've never heard a reaction like that in GA. Do you know, the normally it's just a cheer, because you're somebody threw and you're seeing it for like 5 seconds and you're waiting to see what happens, and it's just pull the trigger and good goal or whatever.
Yeah, but it was just shock.
Yeah,
you just see it, hear it running through the crowd.
Piece of pure quality that you just don't normally see.
Yeah, well, this half volley thing might be catching on. Was it Kieran Molloy half volleyed it in the All-Ireland final?
Oh yeah, for the assist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was a great finish then,
and
as well.
And
yeah,
in the Sigerson Cup, who was it? Wasn't Danny Tallon? Niall Toner from Derry, yeah, who said the headed assist. For because Jardiff Ogue Burns played this past him, and Jardiff Burns, actually, we did a piece on the website about this headed assist, and Jardiff Burns texted me saying he wouldn't have needed to dive and header it if the pass wasn't so bad, because Jardiff Ogue Burns sort of pulls the pass and it's rolling, and then your man slips and he just sort of throws his head at it and sets up the Tyrone player who swings it over for St Mary's. But yeah,
unorthodox finishes.
So football is back and you're on board.
Yeah, that's it. I love my blanket defences now. That's it. We converted.
All right, coming up, we've got Oisin Kiernan from Cavan.
Conan Doherty is a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah. Okay, so I'm joined by Cavan footballer Oisin Kiernan, a man who's story really should be told, and it really is an inspiring story as well, but an important one. I'll just give it a quick sort of snapshot here, Oisin, before we get into it. So in August, you were diagnosed with testicular cancer. In November, you played for Castlerahan against Coleraine in the Ulster Championship. In February, you finished chemo, your fourth bout of chemo, and in March, you came on against the All-Ireland champions Dublin for Cavan in the National League. So how are you today, Oisin?
Yeah, very good now. Very good today. Thanks. All going well. Thanks.
And you're like 100%. You're back flat out training. Are you with the club now at the minute?
Yeah, back fully training. We're with the club for the month of April. and championship next month then with Cav and but they're back fully training and all is going well, thanks for that.
And like, do you feel like he had do you feel like you've lost anything from before or anything like that, or are you just feeling exactly like you did before the summer?
Not that I've really lost that, and it's hard to tell really, because just coming back, I suppose every session is getting better and better. Not so much I've lost anything at all really. No, I don't think I have.
Yeah, well, do you want to go back to August? Like, how did you start to notice something might not be right?
Just in the middle of the championship with Castlerahan, I could find a wee... It wasn't even a lump as such, but more a divot or a kind of roughness down one of the testicles. And I didn't say that, and I didn't think much of it at the time. We were going well at football, so I didn't think much of it really. We played... That was before the Rammer game, I just noticed that. We played Rammer, then we played Balagna, and before the Kingsport game, which was the quarter final, I just mentioned it to my father, saying that I could find a bit of roughness, and he just advised me to go to the GP in Coole. Dad had testicular cancer twice, so he is through that. But so I went over to him, and I got sent for a scan then the next morning. And the man that was doing the scan actually said that your GP would be on to you next week or so. But he rang an hour later and called him back over. So I knew at that point then that there was obviously something up. So we headed over to him then, and he diagnosed me with testicular cancer. I asked him then, could I play the Saturday evening? And he said, no, we couldn't risk it. So that was the start of it, really.
So after he told you you have testicular cancer, your first thought was, can I play on Saturday?
Well, going over, I wanted to play Saturday, so that was kind of in my head. So that was one of the first questions. It was obviously a bit of a shock, but I didn't... it was just something that we had to get... He told me I'd have to get an operation. So it was just get the operation. I was hoping I could play Saturday because I felt so good. That's the thing about it. I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, sure, everything was going so well, and I felt so good, so fresh and fit and strong, that I was thinking nothing could possibly be wrong, but... I think that's the thing about cancer sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, and when you were in with the GP at the first time, like, could you tell maybe by his reaction, did you know something was up just by the conversations you were having with him?
Yeah, we were chatting away, we were chatting about football and just general chat, and he was very calm. But once I just found once he examined me, I knew by his. His reaction, or I did know that he kind of changed a small bit. He said, we're going to have to send you for a scan straight away. I did know it was a bit of a change. So maybe at that point he knew, and obviously couldn't say that until he was sure, but I did realise that point that maybe something wasn't right.
It must have been very scary, Oisin.
Not too bad. I don't know, it was a wee bit of a shock, but I had great support, and Dad was through it, so he kind of just talked to me. Another man, the strength and conditioning coach at Cav, and Andre Quinn, he knew a lot about it too, so he talked to me, and it's not as big as maybe people think. Obviously, I'm very lucky, but I think the thought of it is more scarier than it actually is. So I was lucky enough that way, and... even on the way back, it was more people's reaction when I told the lads of football that night. It was more their reaction that kind of got me more by shock. I was a bit more shocked in that than anything else, but the sport was amazing. And, that was the start of it then. So I got the operation. It was a couple of weeks later then, and I was obviously bedbound for a couple of days. But I still felt good. I was back training after a few weeks, and I actually trained the night before the county final, but obviously by doctor's orders they didn't let me play, but I wore 21 that day, and lucky enough we won that day.
And like, did you feel you were training the night before, did you feel like you could have played the county final?
I definitely felt I could have played, 15, 20 minutes. Probably the fitness wasn't there for a full game, but I definitely wanted to play and felt I could have played for 15-20 minutes. But like, what, have to listen to these doctors too.
Yeah. But what was the you got the operation, and then through before the county final, like, you know, once you got the operation, is that you have the all cleared then? Like, you're after the operation, were you good to go then? Like, that was that everything finished?
After the operation, they said I'd get a scan just to make sure it was nowhere else. So at that point, I was thinking that I was grand. This, like, got the operation, now back to normal. Start back training, a couple of slowly, obviously, and built up. So, yeah, but I got the scan, and then I knew I had the results of the scan. That was after the day after the county final. I knew that was coming up. but I think we were not just focused on the football, and I never even thought of it too much, really. After it came up, I went up the next day, then he told me that it had spread up into my lymph node, and that I have to get 4 rounds of chemo just to get rid of that, and that I should be good then, which thankfully I was.
So this was the day after the county final. You went down to Dublin and got a scan, and that's when they said that the cancer had spread.
Yeah, I was in Dublin for 9 o'clock the next morning. So
it must have been an early start after the night before.
Yeah, it was good fun, but it wasn't exactly what I wanted to hear. But I went back to Ballydough for the lads, and they made it very easy. We were still celebrating, obviously, the win, so they made it all very easy too.
Yeah, so you got that information down in Dublin, and you sort of, was it not sort of, you were just happier to go sort of and celebrate again? Like, was it hard to block it all out, or, you know, like, were you chatting to your teammates about the actual illness itself or the spread of it?
Yeah, we went back and we were all chatting, and yeah, I was just telling the whole lot of the story, and yeah, there was a bit of we're just going to have to go through it and get it done, but that was it, and we were celebrating as well, obviously, after winning. And I knew then I was going to be playing against Kilrain the week after, so it was just about keeping ticking over and keep going to get ready for that game, really, then. But no, it was the day, and all made it very easy. Obviously, Lisa and girlfriend and fat close family as well, but that was the next thing in my head, was the Kilrain game, really.
So was that an other question that you were talking to the GP about? So they've told you that the cancer has spread to your abdominals and lymph nodes, and you're saying, well, I'm playing Kilrain in 2 weeks' time. Is there any chance I can play this match?
Yeah, he said, I don't see a problem with that. So I was lucky enough that way. I started the chemo at the end of November, and that was mid-November. So 2 weeks after that, then I started the chemo.
And how did you find training with the club?
Training with the club before the Kilrain game.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no problem. I was coming back to fitness fairly quick. We trained away and played. I played the full game against Kilrain, lucky enough. Didn't go away that day, but it was good to get back playing.
So, like, that brings us to November, like, and then the end of November, yeah, as you say, you're starting the chemo. Did you know much or what to expect going into the chemotherapy for 4 bouts of it?
Not really. I've heard of the side effects. They obviously tell you that what you could have, and the first one was, it wasn't too bad at all. So I was five days in the matter, and then I was 2 weeks off. Like four sessions of that, but after the first one, I didn't find much difference at all, really. Nice. I was wondering what the chemo they were putting into me until the hair started falling out. but after 2, 3, 4, they obviously accumulated, and it got a bit worse that time. When I say worse, the energy went down, like taste buds, and I was on steroids. So at times I probably looked sick, but I didn't even feel sick, really. I was probably swollen up a bit and pale, and hair was gone, but I felt okay through it. I trained. He said to train away, let your body just do what it's able to. So I trained away, and obviously it wasn't going to be 100%, but it was good to keep going, though.
Like, so you were doing football training, like you were doing a group session?
Yeah, it was pretty much. They advised no real contact, but I felt like they said, the chances of a bruise, and you could bruise very easily in that. But I felt I was 100%. I felt I was fine. Now I wasn't 100% like I was, but I still felt good enough to train away.
So lucky enough, I trained away. When I was in the Mater on the week, the first few sessions, I went to the gym that night, and the nurse was saying I was probably a bit mad to do that. But and then again, the doctor said he was in and out every day, so he said if you're up to it, fine, just walk away. I'm not saying that to up myself, Ratton. I'm just that's what's possible.
I know.
And it can be done for other people going through it, really.
And when you were in the gym, like, I'm not looking for specific numbers, but did you notice, like, was your strength still high? Like, were you doing strength training, or were you just keeping yourself taking over?
I found my strength was still high. I don't know if that was the way with steroids, but I did find my strength was pretty much the same. Now, I felt if I pushed hard, I'd probably suffer the next morning a bit more.
Mm.
So that's why I learned after the first cup to just take it that bit easier, because the next morning you'd probably suffer if you did push that bit harder. But going for walks, and I had nice advice to do that. It wasn't too bad. I just put a bit of tape and wrapped it around the port that the chemo was going through, so no one would ask any questions, really.
Jesus. So during the chemo, the club obviously had finished. He's lost that game, the Coleraine. But you're training with Cavan then at this stage. Like, was that always on your mind then, trying to make it back for the National League? Or what was your target?
Yeah, I didn't really set any targets as such, but I just wanted to get back playing football. So I was going to do everything I could to just get back as quick as possible. And I was lucky enough; I was able to train a lot of way through it. And as I said, I wasn't 100%, but I think it stands to me then when I didn't get the all clear and did go back training, the fitness came back fairly quick then because I was tipping away.
And then that must have been a big sort of achievement, like a personal achievement, I suppose, as well. But it must have been really something then, knowing that you were in the squad and then you came on. And of all the teams you come on against Dublin, like what a way to sort of end the journey. Obviously, like you've gone through the operation, you went through the chemo, and now you're coming on against Dublin with the all clear.
Yeah. Well, it was very nice. It was very good to get on. At the time, I wasn't thinking. I was just thinking of the game itself. I wasn't thinking that anything like that, but. It was great to get back, and I just kind of, it was more, I was mad to get back. I just wanted to prove that I wasn't going to let it stop me, the cancer stop me doing that, and that's really so. It was not very nice to get back, yeah.
Did that help you in a sense? Like, I know, like, you talked about the support that you had from your teammates and stuff, but like, just the idea that you were always targeting something on the football calendar, like, you know, something to focus on and to challenge yourself, and like, you know, rather than, as you say, sitting and feeling sick and maybe worrying a bit more than you would, you're just focusing on getting back for certain games or training as much as you can. Did that help along the way, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. It helped massively. And that's what I was doing. It was the Castlerahan, it was the county final I wanted to get back, but then it was Coleraine. Then I was back in training with Cav, and it was just keeping the head busy, I suppose, and it was very good for folks and just keep training away. And obviously the lads as well, in that with the lads, for the support was unbelievable too. So it definitely helped, that massively.
And like, so you've been with Castlerahan for 2 years now, but like, it must feel like a bit of a family that you're with them, and all the support that they gave you.
Yeah, definitely. That's what it's like. It's a big family. Lads are very tight in this, and I came down straight away and I was straight in. It's been unbelievable, really. It's great to win it as well in the second year. And hopefully we try and go on to it again now.
And tell me this, Oisin, like, so you must sort of have a more appreciation of the GAA, does that make sense, or of just being able to play football? Like, you know, we all sometimes, I think, get bogged down and, you know, the struggles of it all and the stuff that we hate about it, but surely you, coming from your journey, you must just really sort of see the beauty and everything to do with it now.
Yeah, definitely. And now, even the club lads and the county lads, but even lads from different clubs, and the support has been unreal. Definitely you see that side of it too. It's a great community, I suppose. It definitely is. And you were saying appreciate. Yeah, you don't worry about the smaller things as much, I suppose. We're quite laid back anyway, but probably a bit more laid back now.
I saw Mickey Graham talking about his county players being targeted during club games. Are you one of those boys that's being targeted now back in the club action?
No. Well, I actually, my last Sunday was my first club game back because I actually got a slight hamstring injury at the Dublin game, so I was just minding it. So last Sunday was our first game back, but against Kirkhill, but we've barnyarded us again now, so I'm looking forward to playing that game too.
So you didn't get any bad welcome backs or anything like that?
No, not really. Well, it's all the sports, so that's the way. Sometimes that's the way it is, but it's all good.
Well, here, Oisin, thanks a million for your time, and honestly, congratulations. It really is some story and some journey that you've been through.
No problem. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks a million. There is no show on Monday, but Willie will be back on the following Thursday, and we'll see you then.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their asses for 10 years.